Hello and welcome to the Velocino Cycling Podcast. As you might have noticed, we've taken a couple of months off during the summertime, but now we are back with a lot of fantastic guests from all aspects of the cycling universe. In this very first episode, I had the pleasure to speak to Alex Miller from Namibia, who just recently won the bronze medal at the cross-country event during the Commonwealth Games just 2 hours north of us in Birmingham. I spoke to Alex about how he got into cycling. We spoke about the Olympic Games in Tokyo, where he had to compete in front of a very limited audience due to the coronavirus, and obviously his bronze medal run, which also meant the first ever cycling medal for Namibia at the Commonwealth Games. Please bear in mind, this is a fully remotely recorded episode because Alex was already back home in Namibia, so there might be a couple of internet hiccups, and the audio quality might be a little bit below what you usually use from the Velocino Cycling Podcast. But for now, hang on tight and enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to the Velocino Cycling Podcast, where the best stories have not yet been written. This is our first episode of Season 7, and I'm so happy to be finally back recording. We took a bit of time out over the summer. This season, we actually start with an absolute banger. We started with a Miller. So welcome to the show, Alex Miller.
Hi, Nils. Yeah, thanks very much for having me. You're finally after how many weeks of trying to get this together?
About 4 weeks or so, like for our listeners. We tried to record a couple of weeks ago, and then we had like all sorts of technical glitches. Let's call it glitches. And it just didn't want to work. So finally, we are back together recording, and I'm really, really excited.
Yeah, I guess there's quite a lot to talk about, I think.
Some of our listeners know I spent some time in South Africa, about 2.5 years. That's where I met my wife. That's where I spent actually the best time of my life. So I still have like a lot of links to the African continent. And I'm always really excited when I see especially cyclists doing well from this part of the world. So when I saw you actually winning the bronze medal at the Commonwealth Games, I was like, yeah, oh my goodness, that's so cool. I want to find out more about this guy. And because to be 100% honest, like I saw your name popping up every now and then, but I never really 100% put you on my radar.
Yeah, I knew who I was anything like that, yeah.
Yeah, because you're only 21, right?
Yeah, I'm 21, turning 22 end of the year.
It's crazy because just as you listeners don't know, but in the prep talk that we had before, we just found out that actually there's so much stories already in this short career span that other riders might not even achieve over the like a much, much, much longer career. Let's start about cycling Namibia. Like, how did it all start? Where did it start? Where do you live?
So, yeah, basically what many people might not know is I grew up on a farm in a very remote location in the south of Namibia, close to a very small town, which has got like one tar road through it called Helminghausen. And yeah, our farm was located about 60 kilometers west of there. So, I mean, growing up on a farm, you've always got so much space around you. You've always from when you can walk, you've got a bike or a BMX that you ride around with on the farm. So I think it basically started then. I mean, nothing serious, but you'd go and grab the bike after school, go and ride around a little bit. And then I would say I started riding seriously. There was a marathon race happening at one of the lodges called Kleinhaus Vista. What would be interesting for those of you who want to Google it, is it would be quite interesting for you to know where it is. It's in a very remote location, and the owner there, he was doing mountain biking, and so he would always organize this marathon event. And then in 2013 or 2014, I decided to, hey, why not just go there, take part in it. It was a two-day marathon race. I mean, we got there, we didn't know anything like how these races worked. and we only did the first day, and then we left. And like, we didn't even tell the owners that we were leaving and we wouldn't do it the second day or that. So yeah, it was good fun. And then
they must have been very pleased, because I believe they were like looking for you, right?
Yeah, they were like, we told them, like, they saw us going in that, but I mean, yeah, we just did they like the like one day, and then we went back. But that's I would say that was my first race, and I really enjoyed it. And then I like started training a bit more regularly for the next year's event, which I also did. And I think from then on, I started to look around more to see where, if there were more races in the area, or yeah, more competitions. And yeah, I just slowly but surely started doing more.
This is super interesting, because in one of our previous episodes, we spoke about how to deal with like defeat. And I would just, it's very difficult to call this a defeat, because you were only 15 years old and you did like a marathon. So after breaking up after one day, I think it's absolutely fine. But then for you as a teenager, it must have been like, oh, I wish I would have been stronger. So I guess your response to that was like, I want to train harder to do it better next year.
Yeah, it was. I mean, then again, we had no idea how the marathon, or what a 2-day marathon worked like, and it worked what. And we thought, oh no, we'll just do the first day and then go back home.
Okay. Oh, mega. And yeah, but this was in the start of something bigger, because so you were 15 then, and I think
40. The first time I did it was when I was 13. Yeah.
13? Oh my goodness. that's really early. Because then later, when you were 17, I think you won the bronze medal at the African Champs, right?
Yeah, that was 2018. That was 2018. That was, yeah, sort of my first year really competing internationally.
What happened in between? Was this like, I just try to picture.
It was all just local events. Nothing serious. Yeah, all just local events. And then it was actually 2017 where I competed in my first international event, which was the 2017 African Championships in Mauritius.
How do you qualify for an event like this is in Namibia? I guess most of our listeners don't know, and I have no idea how. Are there like a lot of mountain bikers, and then there's like a qualification event, and then they just pick one, or how does that work?
Yeah, so we do actually have a fairly large cycling community, if you take into the consideration the population size of Namibia. So it was all just thanks to me competing in local races, and then the people in charge of the National Cycling Federation recognizing me. And the races leading up to that, I think I would be like first or second junior most of the races. So I think they sort of had me on their radar then already, and that's how I got selected to represent at the African Champs in Mauritius.
I would have gone to Mauritius if I were you. That's amazing.
it was my first time on an airplane flying from here to Mauritius.
Really?
It was my first time on an airplane, yes.
That's amazing. Like little Alex with his backpack. Here we go. That's so good. But you mentioned something that, considering the how sparse the country is, like in terms of like population, there are quite a lot of cyclists actually that come from your home country. Like I just think of like Dan Craven. I think it's a always recurring name in everywhere. Like I think he's in the UK at the moment.
Yes, he's in the UK. Yes, that's right. He's in the UK right now at I think it's the Bespoke workshop that's happening in London.
Yeah. I'm following him on Instagram. So I think if you're interested in bikes from the Namibian country, from the African continent, from Namibia, just check out Onguza Cycles or Dan Craven's Instagram. I think there's quite a lot of interesting things and background stories to all of this.
It's a very, very, very inspiring story. If you go and have a look and read about that, it's nice to see something come out of Namibia at that level. So very inspiring.
Absolutely fantastic. Yeah, I'm really, really stoked about that. But then also other writers like Vera Losa or Tristan de Lange, stuff like that. So like people like that. So considering there are quite some people that come from Namibia that have reached at least fame in the international cycling scene, which I think is really, really cool. Yeah, and obviously you. So which is really cool.
Yeah.
But you're not all from the same area, right?
Most of the cycling community is based around Windhoek. And like there I said, like we've talked about, it's for the population size in Namibia, I think we are about 2.6 million people living in Namibia. And yeah, I mean, I don't know how many people are living in Cape Town now, but it just goes to show we've got a very good cycling community among us. And yeah, everyone knows everyone, so to say. And it's really good to then take part in local events where you meet friends again, and like after the race you socialize, you have a braai. And it's very good, and we're very lucky to have that, I must say, because with me being racing overseas the last 2 years, you get to notice how I guess it's just like, because there's so many more people doing it, everyone does their own thing, and then when you come back here you actually really appreciate what we've got.
I can imagine. Also, you mentioned a braai. So to our listeners who don't know, I mean, you might know, everybody should know, it's basically a barbecue. But I remember very well my very first braai that I ever had. I had no expectations. I thought like, oh, it will be like little sausages and stuff. And then honestly, like this person came and put like the biggest sausage ever on the barbecue, on the braai, I'm sorry. It basically filled the whole thing. I was like, this is a sausage. Yeah, that's how we do it here. Absolutely loved it. Super cool. We mentioned now Cape Town a couple of times. Do you often go over to South Africa to go riding there as well, or is this mainly like the local scene that you mentioned, mainly in Namibia?
Like the local scene, and talking about the braai, is mainly the local scene. I do also go over to South Africa every now and again, mainly to race races there. Yeah, some of the marathons like Tankwa Trek and some of the South African national cross country series as well. But that'll be mostly it.
Did you ever do the Cape Epic?
No, I haven't done the Cape Epic yet. I'm very keen to do it next year, hopefully. Something I'd really be looking forward to.
That's so cool. Like when I was living there, that was always like the pinnacle. We always wanted to do it, me and my wife at that time. I'm actually quite happy that we never made it, because I don't know if I actually would have survived it. But yeah, it's a fantastic event. I think it's 7 stages and always point to point. So the race village is basically moving with you from one place to the other, which is really, really cool. If you haven't heard about that, definitely Google it.
Yeah, very good. You get to see a lot of the scenery around it as well. Well, it depends how hard you're riding.
is there anyone where you would think like, oh, because it's, you always have to do it in a team of two. Is there anyone where you think like, oh, I would love to do it with this person?
Not yet. There are like maybe one or two people I would be like really keen to do it with. But at my stage still, for me, it would still be about getting a good result in that, because I still want to measure myself against the best that ride there in that. So for me it would still be about that. And I mean, it's at the moment, it's for me racing against those guys is fun. I really enjoy it. So yeah.
Yeah, so basically learning a little bit as well then from slightly more experienced riders. In terms of time,
yeah, exactly.
And age, I guess. I mean, yeah, I always wonder, like when you ride in a team of two, like for me, it would have been my wife, because I would have to, like there would be no discussion. She would be my team partner. But when you would have the free choice, would you rather take a rider that is very similar to your style, or would you rather ride with a rider who is better in things where you are maybe not so good?
I think you have to be careful with choosing a partner, because obviously it's going to be hard if he's the stronger one the whole time, and then you're definitely in for some pain. But it's also very important to choose someone you get along with well. After the first day, if you don't get along well, then it's just going to end badly. You're not going to enjoy it. So you have to choose wisely. Like, you obviously want to choose someone who's got a similar riding style as you, but also someone who you get along with well, because 7 days on the bike, that can get quite long, and you need someone to be able to talk to about things on your mind or whatever. So yeah, you have to choose wisely, I think.
Okay, maybe I shouldn't take my wife then. In this situation. But be careful, she might listen. Going further, so you have also, like I mentioned earlier, you're a relatively young age. However, you have also participated in the Tokyo Olympics, and I think this is like a massive achievement as such already. And talk me through this. Like, how did this happen? When did it come onto your radar that you thought, okay, that could be something I would want to do? Like, is this like a childhood dream, or was this only later after you actually won the African championships in Cairo, I think, that way you thought, oh yeah, that would be my aspiration?
I wouldn't say it started there. I mean, yeah, a long time ago. I mean, when I was little, my older brother, he said, one day he's going to go to the Olympics and that. And I was just like, that would be so cool. And so I would say, like, from a young age, I had it in mind, but I never actually thought about it while I was riding or stuff like that. I only started realizing that it could become a reality after the 2019 African Champs, which were actually hosted here in Windhoek. And because the 2019 African Champs were a qualifying event for Tokyo 2020, I was upgraded to elite, because at the time I was still under 23. So I upgraded to elite and I finished third there, which eventually got a spot for Namibia in the mountain bike race.
So that was just one spot, basically.
That was just one spot for Namibia at the mountain bike race. Yes.
And that makes it now interesting, because I think then there might be other riders as well that I might not do justice with this, but I think there was only as main contenders, you and Tristan De Lange were going to go. And then I think there were like about four qualifying races, and this was a bit of a nail biting thing between the two of you.
Yes. Yeah, it was a good, it was mainly Tristan and myself going for the spot. It was like you said, it was quite nail biting, and Tristan was so strong, and he's still so strong. He's such a good competitor. He races well. I really enjoy racing against him. And yeah, like you said, it was close. I think I won one, and then he won, and then I won, and then something like that. But then eventually, I managed to qualify. So yeah, it was a good fight, to say the least.
Mega cool. But then also Tristan also qualified on the road, because I think the main qualification person, oh my goodness, what's in English, the main qualificant.
Yeah, the main qualificant. I'm actually not sure. Yeah,
the main contender.
Yeah.
Dan Craven, and unluckily for him, really unluckily, he I think then got COVID, and then Tristan was able to secure his spot, which I think then in retrospect for the two of you, there was a positive outcome that both of you could represent, because both of you also ride cross country and road.
Road, yeah. No, it definitely turned out well for both of us. Unluckily for Dan, but yeah, it was lucky. He was put on the reserve spot, and then yeah, when Dan tested positive, he got the go ahead to go.
I don't know if you know the story, but a couple of years ago, I think it was during the Rio Olympics, is when Dan's social media got quite wild during his races, because if I remember right, when he gave his other half the instructions, whenever he looks into the camera, that she should tweet, "Hi, mom," or something like this. And a lot of people basically absolutely loved the idea, and because it looked so much as if he would be like tweeting live while he was racing the Olympics, and this made him come a little bit to fame.
He hasn't told me about that story yet, but yeah, Dan is very inspiring. I mean, he still did the time trial on a road bike, because he never went to Rio to do the time trial bike. His main goal was the road race, but then because there were things, some guys pulled out of the time trial or weren't able to race, so then he got a call from the organizer and said, "Hey, do you want to do the time trial as well?" And then I can still remember him telling me the story. He said, at first he said no, because he would look like a fool then doing the time trial on the road bike. So he then hung up, and then he actually thought about it, and he like, I mean, you're at the Olympics. Why not just say yes? Why not? And so yeah, I find it very inspiring and really, yeah, very, very interesting guy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's when I read about him for the first time, and I really hope if he's listening to this, I really hope I remembered the story correctly with this tweeting and stuff, because I thought it was really refreshing and really interesting. I think to remember that a lot of people pulled out because there were so many crashes on the road race, where then people said like, "No, we're not. That we're out, we're just injured." And so anyhow, Tokyo, let's talk about you. So you qualified, you went to Tokyo. The most interesting Olympics, I guess, or like one of the most interesting Olympics, just because of the situation the whole world was in, I guess, like with very limited amount of spectators, I guess, like with very strict controls in the Olympic Village, strict controls, I guess, when it came to competitions. How was that?
Yeah, it was very, like you said, it was quite unique in a way. Those being my first Olympics, I couldn't really compare them to anything else. But just getting ready beforehand, because I was in, it was 2021, so I was in Europe racing for my team, and yeah, just getting all the stuff ready before, and like COVID tests when you have to do them. I mean, we had to do one each day basically, flight tickets, all the correct documentation. I mean, traveling now, you look back and that, you're like, "Oh, it was so complicated." but it was, yeah, eventually it got there. Very, very exciting, very exciting times. Yeah, like you said, a lot of controls, but they managed it very, very well, I found, especially considering how it was going there and what the circumstances around it basically. It was very, we actually didn't stay in the main village, so I landed in Tokyo and then got a bus directly to the smaller village where all the mountain bikers stayed. It was about 3 hours south of Tokyo. It had previously been like a golf estate, So it was very nice. It was, we had a lot of space in that. Weren't allowed to go outside, of course. I mean, for training we were, luckily, but other than that, not. The people are so friendly in Japan. It was so nice to see. I mean, I can't say I've met friendlier people before. And just being in the village with other guys you've looked up to since you've started. It's quite a surreal experience.
Does this get, or did I? Well, the circumstances obviously were a bit difficult with COVID and stuff, but did this give you like a little bit of the feeling of like racing locally almost? Because all of a sudden, all your racers are like together in this little village, having the same aim and stuff.
Yeah, I must admit, it didn't, because I landed there and I went directly to our small, much smaller village. We went after the games, or after our event, we did go to the main village for two nights, but we'll talk about that later. Because I went directly to our small village, we didn't get to see the main village that had been built specifically for Tokyo 2020. And so it did, yeah, being there the days before the event, it did make it feel like you were not at such a big event. It was just strange, yeah.
But then all the big bangers are there, right? Like Nino Schurter, like Tom Pidcock, Mathieu van der Poel and stuff. You're like, oh, they're all hanging out here. So cool.
Exactly, yes. I know, then you do realize like, hey, you are actually at Olympics. But then again, I had raced against these guys previously in some of the previous races, like in Swiss Cups and that in Europe. So yeah, it did feel smaller than it was actually.
Crazy. Did you have also these cardboard beds?
Yes, they were actually some of the most comfortable beds I've slept on.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Like the media here in Europe, they went like a massive thing out of this. Like, oh my goodness, our athletes have to sleep on like paper beds and stuff. And I'm like, really? If it would be really rubbish, they wouldn't do that.
No, they were very comfortable.
The best thing is you can take them home in your hand luggage. So how was it then at the start line? I don't know. Like, what kind of rider are you? Are you somebody who waits at the start line and is immediately focused and just focus on the job at hand? Or is it like, I don't want you to give too much away to your competition, but is it like, oh my goodness, these are the Olympics, all eyes are on us. How are you? What are you thinking?
Obviously, before a race like that, I try not to think too much. It's just better to focus on, as a rider, you know what you have to do. You know what you have to eat. You know your routines beforehand. So you just try to focus on doing that and doing that correctly. Because if you start overthinking, then yeah, sometimes it can end badly. Some people handle it well. Sometimes it can end badly. But I just generally tend to focus on what needs to be done. And yeah, luckily. Yeah, during the race, I must say I found it very humid. I just come from Europe, so yeah, Tokyo was definitely a lot more humid. So I did struggle a little bit, but yeah, other than that, it was actually a good race.
Yeah, I heard about the humidity quite a lot because I'm still following some of my friends from back then when I was doing canoeing, and the German team, they were doing, I think, not as well as they were hoping to do. And as far as I heard, they arrived relatively short to the actual event, and then they struggled quite a lot with this humidity as well. So that must have been like almost like a slap in the face when you arrived there. Yeah, no, that's really cool. For me, I always like to ask this question about how people... what the state of mind of people is that are at the start line, because I was always, well, back then in canoeing, but not also when I do like these amateur or hobby races, a person where I'm 100% prepared. I know what's going to come. I should do exactly what I always did because it always worked. But no, I'm always changing something on the night before because I always think like, oh my goodness, but that would be so much better. And if I don't do that, I would be like really angry with myself that I didn't change. So so I'm always like, I love it to hear from people that are actually achieving what and doing very well in their sport, like that they're like, no, stick to what you know.
Yeah, I think a lot has to do with like trial and error and experience from over the past. So you get to learn what's right and what's wrong in your routine.
And besides the humidity, like the event was it a good event? Did it work well? Was it how you expected it? I mean, like Mathieu van der Poel, I guess, had a different game plan. To the listeners that don't remember, he basically came off quite badly because I think to remember that there was a ramp in the training laps and down a rock. And during the race, they have removed the ramp that you actually had to jump the rock.
Yeah, so the race itself was, yeah, I mean, like a cross country full gas from the start. I was so annoyed with myself because like during some of the laps, I made a few silly mistakes and came off the bike once. But other than that, I was genuinely hoping I would have been happy with maybe like a few more positions ahead from where I finished. But then again, you're racing against the best of the best. So yeah, it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Also, I like we spoke about this before, like although you raced a bit in Europe, but I guess in comparison to like the main contenders, they have like so many more race miles, I guess, in their legs. And also they know each other, I guess, a bit better. Everybody knows like what they are good in, what they're not. And I guess for you, although you raced a bit in Europe, it might be still a bit the outsider role where you're like, okay, well, I know this person's good, but I don't know what this person's good at, really, right? I can imagine.
No, for sure. I mean, those guys, they've been racing World Cups, yeah, the last 10 years. And getting used to that level takes a lot of time.
Yeah, especially Nino Schurter. Like, he is like multiple world champ. I don't even know how often, but it felt like over a decade he was always there at least.
Yeah, I think he won his, I think it was his 10th world champs this year.
Crazy. Yeah, that might be it. Absolutely crazy. What a privilege, right? Or like what an honor, like to stand on the start line with somebody like this,
to race against him. Yeah, it's quite cool.
And then this year actually you were here in England to race the Commonwealth Games. That was really cool. In Birmingham.
Yeah. that was a good experience as well. It was, yeah, definitely a highlight of the year.
I guess most of our listeners know. If you don't know, so Alex basically got the bronze medal, which is absolutely amazing, I think. I think there were like two Kiwis ahead of you. And then as far as I remember, that's a very bad preparation, but I think then Scotland and then England, I think to remember, that might be it.
Yes,
or other way around.
That's right. Yeah, no, that's correct. Yeah. That was a good race. Preparation before that had gone fairly well. I must say it was nice to, because then again, I'd been, just before that, I'd been racing in Europe, in Germany, Austria, Switzerland, and then I flew over to join the national team there. And it's always nice to see familiar faces. Mentally, it's also important that you're in a good space beforehand. Then the race itself was a hard race. We started off quite well, and then I actually didn't have such a great start. And then yeah, the two Kiwis in front, they went from the word go basically. and then it was England and Scotland, and then I was just behind them. And then on the last lap, I finally managed to catch them, basically on the start finish line. And then on the final lap, I wasn't sure how they were feeling, and I wasn't so keen to come down to a sprint. So then I just gave all that I have on the main climb. I mean, it wasn't long, but it was at least a climb. And then when I put foot down there and then checked around, you as a rider, you get a very, very cool feeling when you see there's a gap to the guy behind you, and then it just like it really motivates you, and then all of a sudden you can push hard again. Seeing that gap then really motivated me, and I just while I was ahead of them, I just tried not to think that I was in third, that I like was in the middle position. I just care and like focus on the trail, don't do any mistakes now. And yeah, luckily turned out well.
Was this the moment where you knew I got this?
It was, I had a very good feeling, but then again, the race is only over when it's over. We still had 2 kilometers, 1.5, 2 kilometers to ride. And yeah, in that time you just try to focus on the trail, what's ahead of you, try not to make any mistakes, and yeah, full gas.
Yes. So to our listeners, before this call, we spoke a little bit about that. Often you crash in moments when you don't expect it. It's like completely unexpected situations. So luckily nothing happened there, but that was absolutely amazing. What I think is, like, I never raced cross country. Well, here in the woods against my friends, but not like a proper race. And I always think there's so many things that are playing a factor here as well. First of all, there's so many parts in the race where you actually can't overtake because it's just too narrow. And I always think it's remarkable, because you also have to be like this extra power or extra fitness exactly at the time when there is a part where you actually can overtake. And then at the same time, the other person might be just like snoozing a little bit, right?
And yeah. I just
super interesting.
Yeah, no, there are definitely a lot of other factors that go into racing. Racing in general, actually.
If you compare to road cycling, do you, in cross country, you also need quite a lot of upper body strength and stuff, right? Like, I guess, because it's just so much more, for me, it looks just so much more dynamic than on the road.
Yeah, for sure. You do definitely benefit from a stronger upper body and core strength. You do generally, you see a lot of road riders, I don't want to say neglect core fitness, but if I were to switch onto the road, core for me would still be a big part of it. Just gives you a very good base to build from.
Crazy. Yeah, switching to road, we will speak about that later, because I want to come back to this race in Birmingham, well, kind of chase again. And I just thought this was absolutely amazing to see like someone from Namibia getting a bronze medal at such a high profile event. How was this perceived, like, back at home? Like, I guess, was there ever a medal at the Commonwealth Games in cycling for Namibia?
Not in cycling at the Commonwealth Games. In other disciplines, yes, but not in cycling, though.
Do they often, like, they often refer to whenever there's somebody then all of a sudden gets a medal, then there will be a road with your name or something like this. So is there like an Alex Miller Street in Namibia?
No, that hasn't happened yet. But it definitely has changed.
That must be, come on.
Not yet, no. It definitely coming or winning the medal definitely did, I think, put my name in a little bit more of a spotlight in Namibia. So I definitely have had a lot more people from here contacting me. First of all, congratulating me and contacting me, and a lot has to be said for my support structure behind me, because it's how would I say it? It's like, it's not just me who deserves the medal. It's everyone. It's my sponsors from back home, my friends from back home. I mean, for me, it's always such a privilege to put the Namibian jersey on and represent Namibia at events like this. A lot really has to be said for the guys, family, friends, sponsors standing behind me. They're the ones at the end of the day that keep you going, especially if you're going through a tough time or that.
Yeah, I love it. So, well, I have a solution for that. So basically we will find a place where we can have the Alex Miller Road or Alex Miller Street. And then on the signpost, we can put all the sticker or all your sponsors down. So which stickers or which sponsors would you put on your signpost that supported you the most? Is there any sponsors in particular where you were like, oh, wow, that was really, really good? I guess like maybe material, equipment, stuff like that.
Yeah, so I must say I've been very lucky. While I've been in Europe the last 2 years, racing for Trek Valdez, they've supported me fully there, and it's been such a big help having their support there. But then also when I've come back, companies like Pupkewitz, Megatech have been supporting me while I'm here. So yeah, a big thanks to them for having my back.
That's really, really cool to hear. It's always important to have somebody believing in your dream, right? And then just like being there when you need them the most, but also celebrating with them later once you've basically harvested the fruits of your hard work. Amazing. I just think it's absolutely amazing to see. And yeah, moving forward, what's next? I don't know. I almost feel we have like gone through quickly through this Birmingham experience. Did you actually stay here for a long time?
Yes, I was actually, I was there for quite a while. So for the whole period of the games. And it was because they managed to sort of control it a bit better with COVID and that. It did feel a bit more like a special games experience, because we were at the village. We actually stayed in the Warwick University campus, and that was so crazy. That was so great. I mean, the setup that they have, like there's an entertainment center for the athletes. There was like grab and go food stalls. There's a free coffee from 7-7, free pizza from 7-7. It's such a nice experience.
That's amazing. And how is it when you go to the village? Do they put like little stickers on the doors where everybody lives and say like, here's a medal winner, here's a medal winner?
Some of the countries do. Some of the countries do that. Like Australia, for example, in front of their building, they had like a medal scoring table to show how many medals they'd got already.
And then maybe I had also like the big board, and then it was just like Alex.
we didn't have one, but I think we've learned in the future we'll have to get one sorted out.
Oh, amazing. so cool. And did you like in this situation, I live in England. And I even have a British passport, but I can't say the name. Warwickshire University. Warwickshire. That one. everybody will laugh. Was this where most of the athletes were staying, like cross discipline or mainly cyclists?
There were three villages in total. We were staying in Warwickshire, and it was in that village, it was the cyclists, the rugby players, the boxers, I think, lawn bowls.
Oh, that's my sport.
Lawn bowls.
Mm. there's this running gag here amongst my friends, because every time there's a major event, I always try to identify a sport where weight and age doesn't matter, and then I try to become good in that, and it never works. So last time at the Olympics, I decided to become very good in archery, and I bought myself like a really nice archery set and stuff. I was doing research for like 2 months, and I bought myself like a really nice archery set, and I haven't used it once. Anyways, that's a different story. So the medal table, you said like you want to do that potentially moving forward as a nation, and I guess what we didn't speak about is actually support from the federation. How does it work? I guess, is there like an Olympic committee or like a national cycling federation? I guess there is. So how does this play out? What part do they play? How do they support you, and how does that work?
So obviously we have our National Cycling Federation, which do the selections and that, and do a whole lot more actually. And a lot has to be said about them, because everyone working there is doing it on a volunteer basis. So it's so good to say that we've had cyclists at the Olympics before. We've got a medal now, and that cycling in Namibia is doing so well. So it's all thanks to the organizers of that and the people responsible for that. And also like representing Namibia at events like this. I mean, it wouldn't be possible without our national Olympic committees and national sports federations. We get a lot of support from them as well, and it's good to be able to reward them by bringing back results. And we're very lucky to have their support.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing to see. I can imagine only. Without knowing any numbers or evidence or whatever, I guess that all of them also, or like all these federations operating on more like a shoestring budget, I guess. I think to remember, as an example, in the 2012 Olympics, I think that the British Badminton Federation had a bigger budget than the whole South African Olympic Committee. As an example, and I guess in Namibia it might be very similar. That, you know, the cash is not like, you know, falling from the trees and stuff.
No, it is. It's difficult to. It's difficult. You can't really compare us to a country in Europe, say Germany or Switzerland. That it's too different. But then again, we have to be. Thankful for the people that do support us and help us here.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Really cool. There's a question that just came up during our conversation that we had before this recording, because you also speak German, because there's some roots. I think your dad's mother that was born in Germany, actually. Yes. And I can completely see like how much you love Namibia and how thankful and grateful you are. But did this ever cross your mind to potentially like try to start for another country or something like this? Or is this a completely frowned upon question?
No, definitely not. I mean, I've been lucky enough to like visit a lot of places and be in Europe the last 2 years. You get to see that the grass is not always green on the other side, if I can put it like that. So it's always nice to then come back home, because I mean, home is always home, and it's always where you feel at home, and you're with friends and family. But considering my professional career, I would still look at moving to somewhere closer by in Europe, because as a African rider, racing in Europe is just, it's so hard. It's trying to, first of all, trying to get there, trying to get to events, and then obviously you have to perform there as well, and then trying to get into contact with teams. For the teams to provide a contract with you, you as an African rider, it's quite a hassle for them to then like cover visa issues and stuff like that. So it's difficult, and it's also because you're in a different country, you have to be able to adapt well. I've been lucky to see now what it is like being there a bit more often. But then again, it all comes back down to what you want to be doing. If you want to be racing this as a profession, it's for me, it's important to do what I love doing or to enjoy what I do.
Yeah, it was very well in line with like the next question that I had like in the back of my mind, because I always wonder, like, you've done so well, you're so young. So basically, I always wonder what's next. What's the next step? And as you mentioned, like moving, like going to Europe to race with the big hitters on a very regular basis, always competing against them, which should eventually result also like in then a much different race fitness, I guess. What stops it? Is it the visa situation, you think, or is it like, do you think, I would think like bronze at the Commonwealth Games, everybody wants him.
Yeah, no, I think the bronze at Commonwealth Games, because so many countries in Europe are not part of the Commonwealth Games. I don't think they view it as being as valuable as, say, a World Champs medal or something like that. I think it's a whole combination of factors making it difficult. Obviously, visa and that is there. And then just the traveling beforehand, before events, costs to get there, costs to stay there. It all adds up in the end of the day. So, like I said, I've been there the last 2 years, and I've been very lucky to have the support from Trek Valdez. It's really opened my eyes to see what it's like there racing there.
Where were you based?
I was based in Austria, close to Innsbruck.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was very nice. It was very, very
I can
nice.
Imagine. Yeah, like Austria is beautiful.
Yeah, it's very beautiful.
Is this like the like an area where like a lot of pro riders are based, or is this more in mountain biking that most of the European riders actually train where they're from? Because in road cycling, a lot of people like move to like the Girona area, as far as I know.
Yes, so I moved there because initially two or three of my teammates came from that area, and it just made sense having teammates around you, people you know. That's why I was sort of based there.
And then I just mentioned Girona because you also do road cycling. Like, it was quite funny when I was trying to write my little notes down here. Like, my page was almost full with like titles, like, okay. And this was only cross country, and then we came to the road, and like, okay, Namibian champion, like all of this. So but your heart is like more on the cross country side of things.
Yeah, at the moment the main thing is still the cross country. It has always been. I do enjoy racing on the road a lot. Always a lot more like tactics involved in that. I would actually like to race a bit more on the road, but because it's sometimes the cross country calendar is so busy, you don't have the opportunity to race on the road as much. So hopefully in the future, what I would like is to mix the two a little bit more together. But then again, it also comes back to If you do have a team, if it's a cross country team, if it's a road team, so you have to basically be specific in what you want to do.
Yeah, I guess that's quite difficult, mixing this all up. I think there's not that many teams where you can do both, I guess. Well, I just read recently that Ineos signed Pauline Ferrand-Provost for their off-road team, which I think is quite interesting, an interesting move. Wonder where this is leading to. So maybe other teams are also opening up to do like both, especially now with the growth of gravel. Gravel seems to be like...
Getting bigger now.
I don't know what happens there.
Then again, I mean, the people who do get signed for that, I mean, they do have the results to back them up. So obviously they have that. But it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting you say with the gravel, and that it will be interesting to see where that goes and how if that continues to get bigger.
Yeah, I was really interested. So gravel is basically what I do at the moment the most. Just for me, it's relatively safe. I've like two little children, and at the moment, I just most of the riding that I do is on my own. So I prefer to just go on gravel. I know I don't see any cars there, nothing there. It's very simple. So I had a very strong interest in like watching these gravel champs, and I was very surprised how they pulled that off. Me personally, it looked almost more like a road race. Although I heard that this was mainly the fact because they couldn't televise the off-road sections apparently because they didn't have facilities in place. Anyways, we don't have to go too much into detail, but would gravel be something that you could imagine to do?
It would definitely be something I'd be willing to try. I think if you have the road background from it, I think you'll benefit a lot from it just because you have the volume in the legs.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say no to giving that a try.
Very cool. I really hope to see you next year in Europe, and I really, really hope for the future that you will find yourself maybe in Europe, or at least like at another couple of banger events, because I really enjoyed watching you getting this bronze medal, and I think I'm not the only one who were like, wow, that's so cool.
No, thanks. Yeah. Thanks. And thanks also for getting in contact with me, even though it was through Till or that, but it was, very nice to be on the show.
Yeah, that was really to our listeners, like maybe sometimes you wonder like how we manage to get our guests onto the show, and sometimes it's just really interesting ways. This is actually quite funny how it has all happened. So I went with my family on to the Malvern Cycling Classics in the Malvern Hills, obviously, because my little daughter, we signed her up for the balance bike world championships for 2 to 3 year olds. She didn't race it because she fell in one of the training rounds. She's like, I'm not doing it. So she didn't want to do it. Fair enough. But we bought her a new bike. So anyways, so we were rocking along there. And then my friend Tom from the village here actually saw me just like strolling around. And he's like, yes, yes, yes. Look, there's another German. And I was like, oh, really? Let's go. So we went to the stall next to his stall. He was helping out someone. And I met your friend Till. And it just turned out that he's not German. He was actually Namibian. And we started chatting. And then obviously I was like, oh, this is so cool. You just recently produced a bronze medal winner. And he was like, yeah, I know this guy. I was like, really? I want to have him on my podcast. And I think the next day or 2 days later, you send me a message, I'm in.
And I loved it. Yes, it was. Yeah, he sent, he's a good friend of mine. Haven't seen him in a while, unfortunately, but then he let me know.
Yeah, so good, so good. It's he's based in Germany at the moment, I guess, with the company. And I have to get him onto the show as well. Would be quite cool just to for a bit of a chat. Really nice guy. And yeah, this is how it sometimes works, right? Like sometimes the world is smaller than you think, and all of a sudden you make contact with really nice people that you didn't even know before you would ever be able to speak to. So yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for coming into the show. If people want to follow you, because I guess a lot of people want to find out more about you, what are the best places to find you, to find out more about you?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram and Facebook. Instagram is Alex underscore MTB underscore Miller. So Alex MTB Miller. And on Facebook also as Alex Miller.
Yeah, I will put the link in the show notes as well. And also in our Instagram account, I will link to your account as well. So please give Alex a follow and yeah, see what he's up to. And if you are in charge of a European team, I'm pretty sure you can figure something out for him as well. So get in touch. That would be super cool. There were so many topics where I would have loved to go like almost more into like the detail, like with all the races and stuff. But it was just so much to cover. But I've absolutely loved it. And I personally didn't miss anything in this conversation. So Alex, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Niels. Was good to chat. Yeah, thank you very much.
And to everybody else out there, just don't forget, hop on your bike, ride your bike, because don't forget, the best stories have not yet been written.